Not all brilliant mathematicians get movies made about them, like John Nash and A Beautiful Mind. But maybe they should. Benjamin Yandell is the author of a book called The Honors Class. He says all the solvers of Hilbert problems deserve acclaim for solving some of the toughest math problems around, problems that shape the world of math today. For those of us who aren't in the math loop, what are the Hilbert problems, and just who is Hilbert?
He was really a somewhat universal mathematician. He was German. He worked first in algebra, then algebraic number theory, then in geometry, then in analysis, mathematical physics, then in logic and foundations. He had periods, but he had an incredible breadth and almost a perfect pitch. He had a feel for what was going to pay off. Whatever he treated seemed to get simpler.
Well, I think that in order to understand this, the first thing we need to get some sense of is what the Hilbert problems are. Can you tell me how they came into existence?
David Hilbert was one of the two really dominant, great mathematicians in 1900. And mathematicians, like everybody else, when the century changes, when you go from 1800-something to 19, they all get together and they give speeches about what has happened in the past and what's going to happen in the next century. And mathematicians were really getting organized internationally at this time, and they had had one international congress of mathematicians already in 1897, and then they had one planned in 1900 for Paris. And so Hilbert, talking to Hurwitz and Minkowski, basically decided that the best way to talk about where we should go in the future would be to talk about specific mathematical problems, and that he thought would lead people in the right directions, that would, if they worked on this these problems, the solutions would bring great new explosions of mathematics from their success, that they would open up new areas and solve longstanding old problems but lead to new stuff. And it's partly because of who Hilbert was. The problem essay is beautifully put together.
Well, I thought one of the curious things about a number of the mathematicians in your book that I read about was that they seem to come at these problems from an unexpected direction. And one of the reasons was that they were willing to work with other people, to take somebody else's idea, look at it in a different way, and come up with new results.
I think possibly the public has an image of mathematicians as isolate and socially awkward. I don't know. People have done polls where they asked British school students, and British school students said something like, oh, mathematicians are frumpy, unpopular, and have sweaty palms or something. And that, in turns out, is really not true. And they are actually quite social. I mean, they're such a range that anything you can think of, you can find a mathematician to fit that example. But they do talk to each other. One of the problems in researching this book is when I was trying to get in touch with present-day mathematicians, they were always flying off to go to talk to somebody. You know, in France or in Germany or in Sweden, there was a great deal of movement, a great deal of discussion. Even someone like John Nash, he started from not knowing anything about a problem and tried to build up from scratch, sort of work it out for himself. But he did it talking to the most expert person he could find. And he'd go back and say, well, what about this and what about this? And the person would say, boy, this guy's clueless. And then somehow he kept at it and came back and said, oh, my gosh, he's done something really, really famous. And that's kind of a pattern.
I think we can establish that maybe by talking about some of the people that you've written about. I mean, Siegel, for instance, is anything but a dull, boring eccentric. He was he seems to have been very social but extraordinarily bright.
And difficult and passionate, and he had strong opinions. But I think at base, he was passionate about mathematics and what he wanted to do. And he did it almost like an art, and his writing about it and everything about it, it was anybody who loved mathematics was willing to forgive him.
A complex man, but in the end, a good one, a friend you'd want to have. Mm. Which of the Hilbert problems did he solve?
He didn't solve flat out any one problem, but his results are directly leading up to a number of them, the seventh problem about transcendental numbers, he had a couple of results that set the stage for the final solution, which was made by a Russian, Eyal Gelfand, and his student, Theodor Schneider. Mm. And so he didn't close off the deal, but he created a lot of the machinery. He made a couple of different contributions to the 10th problem, one in 1929, one in 1972. So he had a long, active life.
Yeah, didn't he actually throw somebody's thesis overboard at one point?
Yeah. He had a good friend, Bessel Hagen, who was not as good a mathematician as Siegel and in a different area. And Bessel Hagen gave him his thesis, which back in the old days where there weren't copy machines, was the only copy, and said, read it and comment on it. Tell me if it holds up. And Siegel was burdened by research and burdened by this, and he was out in the middle going to Norway or something out in the North Sea, and it became too much for him. And he threw it overboard and drowned the thesis and then marked the coordinates where he had buried it. And then apparently he told Bessel Hagen when he came back that he had done him a favor. But obviously this is not a favor.
But they made up after that?
Yeah, they made up and went to Greece and had a great time. And you go through the people who knew Siegel, and all of them seem to have this kind of story about him, but they all forgave him because of the good things about him.
Yeah. Well, and some of the other stories that you relate, while on the edge of hard or even cruel, are also funny, and you can see where they would see the humor. There was a box of live crabs at one of his
dinners. Oh, yes.
Dinners.
He invited Hal Braun over for dinner and said, now we will cook dinner or something like that. And he knew that earlier he had tried to get her to make him some coffee. She had refused and said, oh, so you can't make coffee. So one of the next visits, they started cooking, and he had a box, and he opened it up, and all kinds of crabs crawled out, horrifying Hal Braun, and all over the kitchen, and they had quite a set, too, and they had the perfect champagne to go with it. They ended up having a very good meal, but it was quite a emotional roller coaster for Braun.
One more story before you go. Another Hilbert solver is Andrei Kolmogorov.
He was one of the solvers of the 13th problem. But he also, the sixth problem, which was to axiomatize physics, again, one of the problems that hasn't been finished, but that is still of interest. Hilbert specifically talked about axiomatizing probability theory because you needed a rigorous understanding of how probabilities work to do various physical things like how gases work. And Kolmogorov totally solved that piece of that problem as well.
Now, this is a guy who is also, like some of the others you've talked about, from a varied background and of varied interests himself. I mean, he was named, wasn't he, for one of the characters in Tolstoy's...
He was named after Prince Andrei Bolkonsky in War and Peace by his mother, who was a rebel, and his father, and they had not bothered to get married, and they were sort of heading down into the south of Russia and gave birth to Andrei in this town, and the mother died, and the father couldn't take care of him, and he went back, an illegitimate son to this noble family. Again, this was before he was born in 1903, so this is before the revolution, but things were starting to heat up. And the family took responsibility for him, is how they put it. But he was raised by one of his mother's sister, and Aunt Vera, who was just a wonderful lady. But when he came to her, she was very radical. She was part of the ferment like her sister. And so there was an illegal printing press in the house, and sometimes the illegal materials were hidden under Andrei in his crib. So he came out of this ferment. Yeah. And then when he was, say, 14, the revolution happened, and then everything changed. And
you know, this doesn't sound like, though, the way a great mathematician is engendered, does it?
The more you read about mathematicians, the more you realize this is as good a way as any. They really come from everywhere. At some point, they've got native ability that's almost, you know, just in their brain. And at some point, something in their background, some combination of things makes them passionately interested in it, and then they take off.
Benjamin Yandell is the author of The Honors Class, Hilbert's Problems and Their Solvers.